Item 2 is a subdivision and rezoning for property located on Charleswood Road at the Hart Trail, Ridgewood South Area 1, under file DASZ50/2013. In accordance with the City of Winnipeg Charter and the Development Procedures Bylaw, this is a combined hearing and the following item will also be heard at the same time, namely, Item 3 is a closing of Van Roon Drive west of Charleswood Road for incorporation onto DASZ50/2013 under file DAC17/2013. I'm not here, Councillor.
Well, these are new.
Because there's two options.
Okay. Okay, Donovan Day is who I can see standing at the podium, and we're also with applicant Jeff Kratt. Are you Jeff? Okay, great. 10 minutes, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. Donovan Taves, Landmark Planning and Design. We've got several of our team members here, including representatives from Qualico, from Genevar, from McGowan Russell, from Native Plant Solutions. I'll kick it off with the first set of slides, and then we'll call upon Susan Russell from McGowan Russell to talk to us a little bit about AT, active transportation, and then we'll call upon Eric Vogan to deal with some items in the ACG report. Do we have 30 minutes for that? We don't need 30. I just want to know if we have 10 for all three. We'll keep it reasonable. It's quite short. 10 in total? All right. No problem. Excellent. This is the outline for the presentation.
Okay, well, everybody give it their best effort to shrink their presentation.
We won't drag it on, and we've whittled down the presentation to the key points. This is the outline for the presentation. So as I said, we'd like to show the committee what Area 1 looks like in the context of the Ridgewood precinct plan. So we have these precinct plans. All of the sub-areas within the precinct plan need to meet the precinct plan policies and guidelines. So that's what we want to show the committee, that this plan does that. And we'll talk about the transportation components briefly, servicing even more briefly, the Greenway network, and then active transportation, as I mentioned. Susan Russell will join us at that point. You could insert a line after that. That's the point where we'll describe the two subdivision options that were submitted and the reason for that. And then, as I said, Eric Vogan from Qualico will come up to deal with Section 2, which is the ACG report, including some considerations for adjacent Area 2. This is Area 1. There's an adjacent Area 2 and some other ACG items. This is the precinct area. I won't spend time describing it because I'm confident the committee has seen this outline before. We actually did part of this presentation back in September, and then we withdrew the application. So we've come back with some very good adjustments, worked with the community substantially and made some adjustments, worked with the administration as well, and we think we've got a very good product here. That's Area 1 and Area 2. You can just click through the next 8. Everybody's oriented? Next slide. So as I mentioned, this plan carefully addresses all the aspects of the precinct plan, including the homework that's been done as a traffic analysis and road plan, the provision of parks. There's a special effort towards land preservation. We'll spend a little bit of time showing you that. The Hart Trail has been protected, enhanced, and widened in keeping with the precinct plan. There's provision of naturalized lakes. We've made some real strides with respect to cycling and pedestrian facilities, and we have a new concept that we've worked out together with Public Works that we're quite excited about as well. And then we've also included some opportunities for some street and park historic naming. So with Charleswood Historical Society, worked on naming to theme Area 1 so that it's relevant to Charleswood. So we're quite excited about that as well. This is the policy plate out of the precinct plan, and I've just included this to orient us to Area 1 within it. And I'd like to show how Area 1 follows this plan with respect to a collector road system here and here. and the connections to various points in the community on the next slide. So this is a zoom in. I should tell you this slide is from the original presentation and is from our open house presentation. So there have been some changes to this. They're not substantial, but I'll point them out later. But I included this because it had some nice descriptions on the side that we could follow, and the substance of the plan is no different. So with respect to the road system up here, Cullen Drive is not continued, so it's not continued into this road section. And I'll highlight when there's a change. Everything else is not a change. There's a connection to Dale Boulevard. Dale Boulevard is the only roadway in Charlesbrook that's actually designed to be a collector. It's a collector width that hasn't allowed for driveways accessing directly, so that's a natural connection and a planned one. Dale Boulevard continues down and around and connects to Charleswood Road in a roundabout. These bulbs here are roundabouts. We're quite excited about that. Those have been successfully demonstrated to be effective elsewhere in the city, and they're a great opportunity to make a real statement as you come into a community. There was an ACG requirement to connect Charleswood Road to this roundabout, and we've done that. We can show details of that as needed. Transit will run on the collector road, and that's part of the reason for the requirement for the collector road. Charleswood Road gets closed up here. This is the Hart Trail at the north end here, and Charleswood here. When Area 3 develops, probably Area 2 as well, then Charleswood would be closed. In the meantime, people access Wilkes at the same place they do now, which is at the rail crossing right here. Next slide. This is, won't spend time here, it's a zoning map. So we've applied for residential multifamily small. This is now RMFS, correct? It's RMFS, correct? Yeah, so it's mislabeled because it's an old drawing. But the red parts are opportunities for townhouse-type development, so not high-rises, not even six-story, but low-scale multifamily, so that we get a nice integrated product. It looks something like this, but there's a multitude of designs for that scale. We just included the picture so you could see the nature of what's being proposed. And they're all located on collector streets, so there's good accommodation for the traffic. Very briefly, because only the engineers understand this drawing, I think, what you might see that this looks like the road network, and that's because it's actually the pipes, and the pipes are following the road network. So you see water and sewer pipes. Again, this is the precinct plan level of detail, and then our Area 1 plan, which will come up next, you'll see that it follows this precinct plan. It shows the pipes in the roadways here on this plan, and then it shows lakes in concept. And then when we zoom in, there's our lakes, there's our connection for sewer and water and land drainage, and there as well. So Public Works is satisfied that we've done this effectively and properly. I should point out now, and we will talk a little bit more about Area 2 later, but Area 2 can only develop with Area 1's drainage system in place, and then you can see how Area 2 will need its own lake, and it will drain into that system and up that way. And also with the roads, which we'll have a short discussion on later, we've provided for road connections to Area 2 from the south, from the west, and originally from the north, but we're proposing, you'll see, to eliminate that one. That will leave a westerly connection, a southerly connection, and then any number of connections as they're feasible on Charleswood, at least one. So that would leave three for an area this size. This another policy plate, and the last one I'll show you out of the precinct plan. This is really where the heart of the effort, I think, lies. I just want to draw everybody's attention to the size of Charleswood here. And we're talking about from east to west an area equal in size with 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 small neighborhoods all interconnected. So an area, imagine if we had done that in Charleswood, not that Charleswood's not exactly perfect. It's perfect the way it is. But in this neighborhood, it would be a little different that from east to west, you could walk from the perimeter all the way to Assiniboine Forest on a trail system, which is pretty cool. And along that trail system, they'll all run along the lakes that are required. The lakes are required to be naturalized. So as you're walking along, it'll be the same experience as you go from, as I said, the perimeter highway all the way to Assiniboine Forest. And then throughout each neighborhood, you have a chance to walk in loops. And all of this is connected to the Hart Trail, which I mentioned has been protected. It'll be enhanced by virtue of these other trails. The focus on that Hart Trail will be for pedestrians. We're having active transportation facilities off-site from the Hart Trail to encourage that trail to stay functioning the way it is. Let's see, I skipped all my notes. And I mentioned some of these already. I mentioned some of these already, but these are principles that come paraphrased out of the precinct plan, and the HART Trail from the very beginning to the very end has really formed a key discussion point. It's not the only discussion point, but we've spent a lot of effort on making sure that that it's preserved in its existing alignment, that there's a minimum number of new trail crossings, that it's a non-active transportation trail by its nature. We've had to make some adjustments, of course, for the long-term plan of the William R. Clement Parkway. There's no getting around the fact that parkway is required. It's part of the inner beltway, loosely speaking. And we've had to adjust the trail, but we have worked and will continue to work with the representatives of the HART Trail. They've been great to work with. Adjacent land uses as single family only. There's different land use options that we thought of really early in the process, and some of them included multifamily along the trail, but we've eliminated that in the precinct plan, and it doesn't show up in Area 1 in accordance with that plan. And expansion opportunities for the trail I've mentioned already. And then on heritage theming, I mentioned this, but again, working with the Charleswood Historical Society, these are unofficial, but we have worked with, we'll continue to work with the Historical Society to create a theme that makes sense for Charleswood, and that's a value-added proposition as far as we're concerned. A little bit on parks and trails. I've talked a little bit already about that, but zooming in on Area 1, you can see the lakes. These green areas will include trails which will run north-south through the community. We have east-west sections, one that will lead, a critical one that will lead into Area 2. Is that 10 already? I'll be quick. As well, I wanted to point out how it connects to HART Trail up here. And then there's two other elements which the next slides will describe, one of which is this high-quality natural area. It's the only high-quality natural area in Area 1, so we paid special attention to it and have worked with the community substantially, particularly since our last hearing, to see how we can minimize impact to that area and preserve a good chunk of it. This is still Area 1. There's Area 2 in green. This is that high-quality natural area. And the next view, now we're looking, click a couple times, Jeff. One more. There. Now we're looking west, so the perimeter's up and off the drawing to the top. And then this is HART Trail here, which is on the north side of this area. So the subdivision plan that we originally submitted kept everything in that orange, roughly speaking. This area was not included, and subsequent, well, actually at our last public hearing, you might recall, Mr. Van Roon from one of the residents and also one of the leads for the Historic Society had told us there was Big Blue Stem, a plant called Big Blue Stem in that area. And we actually, Qualico hired Native Plant Solutions to go look and verify the information from a scientific perspective. And they did verify there's some Big Blue Stem there, and it's of some age. So we've ventured to try and save, if you will, or preserve the lion's share of that Big Blue Stem, and the plans that we're going to show you do that to a certain degree. Next slide, please. I hadn't mentioned down here, this just off the drawing is that cloverleaf at the Wilkes and the Perimeter Highway. And we designed this trail system so that eventually it could take advantage of the underpass there so you could get pedestrians through and under safely. Oh, nice transition. And this is a picture of with enhancements on it to show how that can be done. And that's been done before in other parts of the city. So we actually did some more due diligence, had Genevar go out there, study it, tell us if this was actually feasible, because maybe we hadn't done enough due diligence to say that was feasible. And we have, and we're confident about it, and we like that solution. Next. Okay, so I think this is where I'll hand it over to Susan. Sure.
I've only got 3 slides, so I'm going to be very short, and I am short. This first plan demonstrates conformity with the precinct plan. I'll just go through a couple of the items. I don't know if you can look at... that's good. The Dale... Boulevard extension, thank you. Along that section, we've got connections to the HART Trail, so we connect within and beyond the subdivision, direct connections to HART Trail, linkage to the Area 1 public park, so we connect into all of our public parks along that Dale Boulevard extension. We've got the bike path and sidewalks all the way along there that connect into the park right there, back again. And we also connects through that, the recreation paths that run through the park system, thank you, and go directly east, yes, into there. So we've got all the connectivity afforded as required through the precinct plan. Next slide. We've got some enlargements that indicate in more detail what we're proposing in terms of the Dale Boulevard extension and the active transportation or pedestrian and cycling facilities that are proposed. What we're looking at is keeping the standard sidewalk, obviously, both sides of the pathway, both sides of the roadway, and then immediately adjacent to that, including 1.5-meter wide asphalt bike paths, we're calling them, so that they're separated from traffic, so much, much preferred and much superior to having it mixed with traffic. So we've got that happening there on both sides of the street. So the bike path in each side would be going with the flow of traffic. So on the east and the north sides, it would be traveling north and or east, and on the south and the west sides, it would be traveling, west. And then on the south and the west side, you'd be traveling south and or east. If that makes sense, south and west. So that you've got the two lanes of traffic separating, so there's no point of collision, those kinds of things. So, and this was reviewed and supported by Public Works. We had many meetings to come up with this solution, and everybody seems very happy with it. Next is the section, which might illustrate this a bit better in terms of where you can see the bike traffic, the cycling. Can you point to that? So you've got the bike right there, 1.5-meter wide, and then you've got the pedestrians on a concrete sidewalk, asphalt pathway for the bikes, and then you've got a very substantial, sodded boulevard with trees and streetlights, and then you've got a parking lane, and then you've got the standard width roadway. And that's it.
Thank you, Susan.
Paula has a question for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, hi.
I like when people ask me questions. Normally they don't, though.
Well, over the years now, I've looked at naturalized lake shores, and I just wanted to double check that that is what is going to happen. And maybe you could comment as sort of the natural expert.
Absolutely, yes. In terms of, I don't have a picture of this, but I don't know if you're familiar with Sage Creek, but yes. So absolutely, there's going to be the naturalized native grasses from normal, well, the pond itself would be naturalized, and then from normal water level to the pathway, which we would like to be limestone, 2.4 meters wide. It's pervious, much better for the environment, reflectivity indexes, all those kinds of things. So you'd go from naturalized pond, from normal water level, to the edge of the pathway would be all naturalized, then the pathway, and then from the pathway to the property line would be sod.
Okay.
So a very small portion of sod.
And so that enhances the habitat? And
absolutely.
Do the animals actually come back and all the habitat?
That's what I'm told. And Native Plant Solutions is here, so they could even comment on that if you had further questions.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay, so a bit of a recap here in terms of what's happened since our last visit with you. Since the public hearing held in September 2013, we've revised the plan, as I indicated before, in a number of ways. There's a proposed street connection at the south end of Area 2, which was missing in the previous plan. We've removed the 10-meter public reserve along the CN line, and I'll point that out in the plan. This creates a no-man's land. It's a bit of a problem, but we think will work out okay in the end between the fence and the rail line. And then we've removed the north-south public reserve west of the forest in Area 2. Better to show you on a plan. Here's the thing is our current application, as you noticed in the advertisement, included two subdivision options, which I'll explain in a minute. Option one does not preserve that big blue stem we talked about, and option two, unfortunately, would make use of a right-of-way called the Van Roon right-of-way, which actually maybe we could just go to the, this would be easier. So this is option one. It's how we originally submitted it, with the road running through this natural area. We need to run one road, so we picked an area up here we thought was best because it was thinnest in terms of forest cover. But as I mentioned, we didn't realize that there was good big blue stem there, and it was of some value to the community and to others. And so we looked at option two, this one. Toggle back and forth once or twice, Jeff, please. So watch this roadway disappear and drop down here. Again, it was up here, and then it's down here. Thank you. Option two, using that Van Roon right-of-way, and we discovered when, after making the application, we triggered forestry to go look at it. Forestry went and looked at it and then sent us a note saying they've assessed the quality of the forests there, and it was a bill of about $425,000 to purchase that in order to remove the trees in keeping with city policy. So we said, no, that's not going to work. That's too much. But in the end, we're quite happy because it sort of sent us back to make an adjustment to this plan to see what we could do. Maybe we could do something about the big blue stem and keep the road out of the oaks, and we've managed to massage that plan. And as I say, the community groups have been very helpful in that respect, and you'll hear from some of them, I'm certain. The next option is just a revision to two. We tweaked it. I mentioned this already. Go ahead. To now do this. So before the road was here, then the other option was in the Van Roon right-of-way, and instead of doing this, we've tweaked it to raise the road up a little bit. And in doing that, I think we've got a real successful plan here. It avoids the big blue stem and avoids the Van Roon drive. One thing, the reason it was so difficult, and we worked carefully with Genevar and McGowan and everyone on our team to do this, is all of the plans, no matter how we jigged them, created a great loss in frontage. And so from an economic perspective, it seems like a little area. But, you know, those lots are pricey, and frontage is very expensive, and that's part of the equation. So we juggled and we massaged until we found a way to save the oaks, save the big blue stem, and get equal frontage than based on the plan that we had before, compared to the plan we had before. We did that by, in part, eliminating a road right-of-way that used to connect to Area 2 here. And we hashed that over with our transportation engineers. They looked at it. We talked about it with Public Works. They've looked at it. And everybody's okay with that because we still provide access to Area 2 here, access to Area 2 here, and then any number of opportunities to come off of Charleswood Road. So there's three. By comparison, up here in Area 8 possibly Area 10 as well, there's only two accesses for something the same size, and in this case, there'd be three. So... and I know that there's some concern from the landowner here about that, and we'll address that in some subsequent slides. That's a zoom in of that area, just so you can see it a little better. Oh, could you go back one? I just wanted to point out there's the big blue stem. I don't know why it's blue other than it must be. Oh, yeah, big blue stem. Okay, it's blue. We saved the lion's share of it. We've done everything possible to get as much as possible, and we're quite happy with that design and that response to the concern. Okay. Oh, I should mention, too, there's a widening of the Hart Trail here, which was one of the principles. Wherever possible, we could try and create some more PR adjacent to the Hart Trail. Not widening of the Hart Trail surface, but the right-of-way within which the Hart Trail is contained, so that when you're walking down the trail, you've got more bushes to the right and to the left of you. In this case, we expanded it to the right, well, depending which direction, to the south. We anticipate...
Yeah, wanted kind of an expansion.
Yes.
A little bit of increase in the Hart Trail.
Yeah, I expect you'll hear from them on that as well. Okay, so I'm going to hand it over to Mr. Vogan to talk about ACG items, unless there's questions for me on what I've presented so far.
Good evening. I'm Eric Vogan, as I think you know. I'd like to say that over the last 2.5 years, we've learned a lot about Charleswood. I think Charleswood learns a lot about Charleswood, and I really believe that our patience has been rewarded. We've, as I say, I think we're a lot smarter for the process we've gone through, and there are a lot of people to thank for it. But at this point, I'm excited to get into the detail of this minutiae of the application. First, I'd like to talk about the plan revision that as it affects Area 2. And I don't know where that might slide be. But Area 2 is an area of approximately 25 to 30 acres. And as Donovan pointed out, we are offering two new accesses to that road at our expanse, or to that area at our expanse. And frankly, in order to offer land drainage for that area, in order to make it work to an urban standard, it would have to hook up as directly as possible to the land drainage that we have planned for Area 1. So the key access there is from the west, and it is necessary in order to get urban development into Area 2. The point of that is that some cooperation among landowners is going to be necessary in order to make Area 2 develop to an urban standard. That shows the various landowners within Area 2. And just to the west of the, what would you call that color, Ekru? The tan area, you notice the road right-of-way there, and that is the key right-of-way that would have the oversized pipe in it to accommodate land drainage coming from a new pond, which is outlined in dots there. That's all I have to say about that. I'd like to now address the public reserve conditions within the ACG report. And the items I'm going through right now have been given, copies have been given to the administration, and we have discussed these items with the administration, and a large number of these items, and there are seven of them, have been agreed to by the administration. So I'll just focus on the areas where we have trouble. Within the area of public reserves, I guess there are two things. During the last couple of years when we were engaging the people of Charleswood, we found that pedestrian connectivity was very important. The trails are a very important feature that they are looking for enhancement on, and also, of course, the quality of the forest lands there and preserving those lands. Coincidentally, the administration is asking that lands where there are trails adjacent to lakes be only given half credit. In other words, we don't want linear ponds. We want nice round ponds that are have much more, leaving much more flat land. We are offering a linear trail experience, offering a lot of connectivity, and part of that is by making a round pond long and skinny. That is a great, much greater use of land for that purpose, but it provides a much better experience, and I think the connectivity you will see in this area will impress you. I know that those who have been to Sage Creek would appreciate that. We are therefore asking that given the improvements we make on these lands adjacent to these linear parks, the wetland grasses, the uplands grasses, the trail work, and the improvements to make sure that those trails are in good shape and easily maintained over long term, we're asking for 100% credit for that land.
That's right. The long oval ones is something that...
the administration's concern is that we're offering land that has a slope.
Yeah.
And although there is a slope, there is a lot of excitement within that slope. We're offering native grasses down by the ponds, wetland grasses, uplands grasses, and a whole... ecosystem works within there, and it's quite a ride. It is a good system, and I know that those that have experienced it know that it's better than just a trail on a slope, which is what they're concerned about. So given that our commitment to the standards of this area, we're asking for 100% credit for that type of public reserve. And we know that people like it. The traffic, the enjoyment that citizens get walking on those trails is well known to us.
You base that, Eric, on Sage Creek? Or
Our experience in Sage Creek and in Headingley as well. Headingley is overwhelmingly thrilled with the trail provisions they've made and the uses of it and the accolades from their citizens for doing that.
And it's more of a unique experience as opposed to the unique experience plus the...
Well, it gives you a chance to walk into the whole system. These wetlands bring a an activity to an urban area that's just unknown to many Winnipeggers. A very big change from the more sanitary clay ponds that were the habit of the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And this is a chance to walk through it. And it's part of our job to make sure that that is a good experience. And we work hard at that, and we believe that that work is worthy of 100% PR credit. We already give the city 25% in addition to the area of the pond as impoundment for no credit. So in other words, the first little bit around the whole ponds, the first next acre of a 4-acre pond is given for free to the city. It's beyond that.
Without prolonging too, you might want to explain to the audience too in terms of the credit, when you talk about the credit to the PR credit piece, you might want to just...
Well, we're obliged to provide park, and then we're looking that this park land be given full credit for that because it is indeed a valuable experience.
Gotcha.
Secondly, we've also been told by the administration that if we provide forest, they want to charge us for the amount of money that we would have spent sodding and grading it and providing road access to it. It's our contention that such a precedent would be a very dangerous thing to do. This is far beyond the development agreement parameters, but also a dangerous precedent because it tells developers that if you leave forest on the property, you may be asked to provide that as park, and if you do, you'll have to also provide money for sodding something else. The upshot of that is what has happened in the city. Developers that have a piece of forest, that they think, before we make our application, we better level that thing. I do not think that's a good precedent. We have lots of forest in our future holdings, and we do not think that it is smart to go raise the land and then redo it. I think we've got to do the responsible thing, preserve decent habitat and decent forests, and not be penalized at the time of subdivision application for having taken that land out of agricultural circulation and making sure that it's available for park. So we are asking that we be given credit for saving the forest, leaving it as forest, rather than having taken it down and sodding it.
You have to pay for that, like say, if you cleared it. Per se, you said you would have to pay for that anyways, right? But if you leave,
the reality is you
probably have to pay for it either which way.
To take it further, had we left it as grassland and just left it as grass, they'd probably ask for sod, even though it was already sodded.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the fact, and I think most people would like the forest element of things. But to be fair, it seems like you'd pay for it either which way.
We don't put it to agricultural use, therefore we're paying more taxes on it. We're not getting the yield off that.
Yeah.
But it's something that we know is a much valued thing in a community,
yeah,
so it's our job to keep it, I think.
Sure. Okay.
So we're looking for the regular credit on that as well. Now, accordingly, we have a number of clauses that we would like to see deleted and replaced, and we have presented to the administration a request that we delete clauses 19B, C4, D and E from the ECG report and replace another one where we will provide public reserve lands along with compacted gravel trails, native grasses where practical, and sod only as necessary. And
have you got a list that you can give us?
I can, well, I've given it to the administration now. If I can,
I got copies that I can hand you.
Okay, you know what? I've got one. Thank you.
Somebody that thought further ahead than I is here, I'm glad.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, well, we're sort of rolling along here, but Eric, so these are the substitutions or corrections or replacement clauses you'd like to see.
Well, the two items I just discussed are the main items of what I would describe as contention here. The remainder of these items, with the exception of fencing adjacent to public reserve, have been reviewed by the city, and we have found agreement from the administration on all these things. I can say that we have taken the time to meet with the administration and find agreement on as many areas as possible. If you would like me to skip along, if I may dare, we've asked for changes with regard fencing along the CN line, where we've found agreement from the planner. We've similarly with fencing along the west perimeter, we've looked to do a higher fence along the west perimeter, and we found an agreement from the administration there. The administration has also asked that we produce a fencing plan for everything adjacent public reserves. We have our own policies for fencing adjacent to public reserves, and many times the best fence is no fence. Fencing uses is generally what we'd like to see, and when we do fence something, we register a restrictive covenant that requires the owner of that property to maintain the fence as delivered very strictly, and there are restrictions on adjacent uses as well. A city fencing plan would accomplish none of that, and we think that it's best left with the developer to handle fencing and keep it out of the administration's hands, because their ability to register the agreements that we can is very limited.
So when did you submit these? Was it today that you guys submitted them?
These were part of our submission in September, and okay. We've been talking with the administration since. Okay. And as I say, the items that are on the third page of my piece have been generally all stipulated to and agreed to by the city.
Is there any of these items that could be done through a site plan?
Pardon me?
Is there any of these items that could be done through the site plan, or does it...
Our habit in other community committees has been to present a piece with in consultation with the city for adjusting clauses.
Okay.
On the last page, we talk about a cul-de-sac length with maximum number of lots, which has had been agreed to by Public Works. Limitation on building lots. There is some concern from Public Works as to the efficacy of the road network, and they're looking to see how it proves out. So they're asking that after we develop and deliver 300 homes, that we put a hold on going no further than 500 lots to make sure that the traffic engineers we've employed have got it right, and we're ready to work with that, with the adjustment to a 500-lot maximum. Finally, little items, tree maintenance. The development agreement parameters require that we maintain boulevard trees for a year. We want that to be stuck as per the development agreement parameters rather than the change from the parameters being asked here. And finally, there are overhead lines on Charleswood Road, and it is not our intention to bury them. Just want to make sure that everybody understands that's outside our planned area. That's the complete package I have. Now, there are a couple of details here that may require some tuning on behalf of the clerk and the administration, but I'm hoping that they see the package as understandable. That's all I have.
Thank you, Eric. Can you tell me what steps would be taken during the design, the development, to ensure the blue stem and the oak forest are protected and will survive?
I think that the first thing is fencing. If we're bringing in a construction crew into an area, it's our operation manager's job to make sure the contractors we hire know where the no-go zones are.
Okay.
It's been quite a learning process for heavy construction guys to learn that tall grass isn't something you park a 950 loader on. But they are learning, and they've come quite a way. As a matter of fact, these guys are actually getting pretty good at creating wetlands.
Okay. In the purchase agreements, when we look at the north end of the property that borders along the Hart Trail, it's very important to the community that the Hart Trail not be looking, when you walk on the trail, that people not be looking into backyards. Are you doing anything in terms of what you're going to allow properties along the north end of the development project to be clearing, for example, or fencing? I mean, what are the parameters going to be in the purchase agreement?
Well, firstly, along the north side, where there is good vegetation right now, we have expanded the park public reserve to add that as public reserve. Furthermore, we have the capability to register a vegetation easement along the back ends mm-hmm. of properties to limit the amount of incursion that let's say a lawn seeker would have into the edge of a forest.
So will you be doing that automatically, or is that something we need to put in?
Well, we're going to do that every time there's a good piece of tree. Absolutely, it enriches the adjacent area because of that extra foliage, and we believe that as long as people know what they're buying, they appreciate it too. And that is one very important thing about what we do, what we know we have to do, is make sure the buyer of the lot knows what he's getting into.
Okay. At the end of the day, can you tell me what percentage is being allocated as green space? And I want that on the record in this hearing, or some approximation, because that was quite a contentious issue during the two nights of hearings that we had. What is the actual percentage of green space that you're preserving or creating, I guess?
Well, the total zoned as public reserve is somewhere in the neighborhood of about 20, 21 acres. However, 8 acres of that would be water level wetland, and another acre and a half roughly would be impoundment. The remainder of that, about I believe it's 12 and a half acres or so, would be public reserve for which we are seeking credit. That works out to, by itself, about 7.4% of the territory. That means we're under dedicated. We have therefore an allowance available for the acquisition of further lands, or for example, a conversion of perhaps a Van Roon right of way into an east-west trail on the south side of our eastern extension there. So we have a little public reserve slack available, and I guess we're ready to talk about how this community committee and the neighborhood would like to see that used.
There's been a lot of talk of developer cost charges, and in the report it specifically talks about the development agreement, which will reflect water, sewer, land drainage, standard for roads. Can you speak to that item?
Well, the history of Winnipeg land development hasn't been by formula. It's been more of a custom job. Although we do have very definite costs put on our land, it's not formalized as much as it is in other cities. I think probably the best example of where city administration has achieved good formulas is in stormwater retention. Our stormwater retention charges for land drainage would come up only in the case where there is an expectation that people have to share the benefit of work done. But that generally would be something in the neighborhood of $15,000 to $20,000 an acre. We have a major road charge here, the Ridgewood Transportation Levy, which we believe is going to show up somewhere in the neighborhood of probably about $40,000 an acre. We do not formalize dedication as a cost per lot, but we have it as a percentage. So other cities do it a little differently, but we definitely show, and these show up in the big developments when we have to provide the full range of services as opposed to a very small step-out development.
Are there any back lanes in your proposal?
We're proposing back lanes in a few areas off Dale Boulevard, and in those areas we're also proposing that a slight increase in density be available for things like condominium townhomes. We've found that format to be successful and blending well with single family.
I just wanted to ask you about the traffic portion. In your changes that were submitted, you're proposing that the city conduct a traffic study, or that was one of the requirements, that the city conduct a traffic study at 300 units, is that right?
That's correct.
You're supportive of that? Or?
We're yes. Yeah. The city's professionals discussed it with our engineering professionals, and they're going to, I guess we have committed to keep studying the traffic as this place develops to make sure it shows up as we expect. And if there's something that turns out to be significantly different, then we can expect to have this development limited to a total of 500 lots, with the remainder coming on as further traffic improvements to the east show up.
And if the traffic analysis shows that a collector is required or some other traffic improvements, where will you be at then?
Well, the it's expected that once the network to the east materializes, the pressures on Dale Boulevard will subside, and that's where I think the pressure is expected to show up. So we're watching for that. Things such as the provision of transit within the area using a collector loop we provided, and keeping the we're opening Wilkes early to make sure it's understood as a good route, are important parts into making sure that the plan works without stressing the existing facilities too much.
That's all I have. Yeah.
Okay, Donovan, does that sort of conclude your roadshow?
That's our 10 minutes. Thank you.
Want to take a bio break, or what are you going to do?
Well, we've
check your phone.
So should we continue here?
Yeah,
what?
Continue for a bit.
Okay. All right. We will carry on with people in favor of the application in support, and we'll ask Jason Rowe. Jason, are you here? On deck will be Glenn Culba, Ravi Joshi, Susan Russell, and at any point, if any of you want to just say in favor, that's fine too. All right, I'm going to make a decision here now, just so that it'll be fair to everybody. The applicant has made their presentation, but I'm going to recommend that we split the difference on 10 minutes and go with 6. So,
I've timed my speech. It's 3.5 minutes.
Okay. Kirby, 6.
Okay. Good evening. My name is Jason Rose, and I'm the owner of Adrenaline Adventures and a Charles Wood resident for over 35 years. I'm here speaking in support of the entire Ridgewood South Precinct plan. Charleswood residents have been begging for new lots to become available to build on for as long as I can remember. As a business owner and neighbor to the west, I have a major concern about the public safety. The active transportation pathway shows in the Ridgewood South Precinct plan works well within the city boundaries, but do not alleviate any problems with Charleswood residents crossing the perimeter. The plan shows for a pathway to go under the overpass and then stops abruptly. This is essentially a path to nowhere that would only be utilized by a small portion of the most southerly section of the Ridgewood South Precinct plan. Charleswood residents utilizing the Hart Trail will not travel 3,000 feet to the south to go under the perimeter highway only to have the path end. It is in people's nature to take the most direct route when trying to get from point A to point B. The City of Winnipeg owns a service road on both the west and east side of the Perimeter Highway. The Ridgewood South Precinct Plan will be adding thousands of new residents to the area. This should be recognized and a safe passage created for new residents wishing to cross from one side of the city to another. Adrenaline Adventures is a year-round outdoor adventure park that attracts tens of thousands of customers each year, with the majority of them living in the City of Winnipeg. I have on numerous occasions witnessed both pedestrians and cyclists having near misses while attempting to cross the perimeter highway from one side of the city to the other. We are an attraction that will see larger numbers crossing the perimeter highway as more residential areas are being developed. Back in the fall of 2011, there was a fatal pedestrian vehicle accident. I was at Adrenaline Adventures the day this occurred and witnessed the driver trying to perform CPR. 2 years later, after this horrific scene, which will forever remain in my mind, was revived when the mother of the adult male who was killed called Adrenaline Adventures to speak to me about her son's death. She is struggling to cope with the death of her son and wanted to reach out to others who witnessed this tragedy. This horrific day should never happen again. Unfortunately, I believe that if
a pedestrian flyover, the perimeter highway is not built, this tragedy will in fact repeat itself. And let me ask you, would you want your children crossing the perimeter highway? I don't believe the City of Winnipeg should be 100% responsible for the costs of a pedestrian flyover, but they should most definitely take the lead and see it through to completion. Consultation should start with the province immediately in order to capitalize on infrastructure and active transportation projects that will benefit all Manitobans. I truly don't want to be the guy that says, "I told you so," when another pedestrian vehicle accident occurs. The potential that this will happen again is extremely high. It's no longer a question of if, but more of a question of when. Then the final question on everyone's mind will be, why did this happen, and what could have been done to prevent this? Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks for coming out tonight. Did you see the option proposed with a walk under the perimeter?
I did.
And is that not suitable?
The problem with that is it doesn't, it's a, like I had mentioned in my speech, it's a path to nowhere. It stops on the west side of the perimeter highway, and I'm not sure what benefit that is to Charleswood residents.
Maybe we can hear from the proponents then in their closing arguments about where it connects to them.
Yep, certainly. Yeah. But like I had mentioned, just the nature of humans, they're not going to, when they want to get across 100 yards, they're not going to walk 6,000 feet to try and get across the perimeter highway. That's my opinion.
To confirm, you're aware that the perimeter highway is not our jurisdiction. It's totally the province of Manitoba.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, and I'm sure operating your business, you've come to understand that. So it would have to be in concert with, and possibly with the member of the legislature from Charleswood. And I'm not sure where the new member of the legislature, Morris, kicks in. Are you in Morris or are you in
yep.
Charleswood?
Yep.
You're in Morris.
That's correct.
Okay. So, you know, that dialogue may want to open up too. Albeit it serves, for the most part, citizens of the City of Winnipeg.
Yeah, and I think that the city is in control of that because they do own the property on both sides of the perimeter. Mm-hmm. So it would all roads would have to go through the city.
For sure. Okay. Anything else? Thank you, sir. Glenn Kolba, are you in favor? Ravi Joshi. Susan Russell. Mike Armstrong. Scott Minty. Wendy Josephson. Barbara Hutton. Okay, come on down. Dean Coombs. Alan Roberts. Okay, well, come on down and take a seat on the bench there. So, Barbara, are you on your way? Okay.
Good evening. My name is Barb Hutton. I am a Charleswood resident, but tonight I'm speaking to you as the president of the Friends of the Heart Trail. We're speaking in support of the revised option 2, and mainly because of the preservation of the big blue stem that is close to the Heart Trail.
Yeah, I think they identified it as the one. They initially had one up high and they went lower, and then there's another one where there's the third option.
This one. The one that you're seeing. Okay, 2B, that's right. I'd like to express appreciation to both Landmark and Qualico for their consultation with not only our group, but the other groups within Charleswood. And they've not only consulted, they've been responsive to our concerns. And in fact, this option is very close to something that we had come up with ourselves within our group as being preferable, in that it preserves most of the big blue stem and a large number of the high-quality oaks. I must say that the Friends of the Heart Trail continues to have a concern about the increased vehicular crossings of the Hart Trail at Charleswood Road. And I know that that's part of what has to happen, and that eventually Charleswood Road will be closed at the Hart Trail. There is increased pressure, there will be increased pressure and usage of the Hart Trail with active transportation people within that group using Hart Trail until other active transportation corridors are created. So I'd like to go on the record for the Friends of the Hart Trail to urge that further development south of the trail be curtailed until such time as those east-west collector roads are created and the active transportation alternative is there. And that it seems to be much quicker to speak in support than in opposition. Are there any questions?
And Dean, are you here? No? Alan Roberts, there you go.
Thank you.
Saying in favor.
In favor? Okay, thank you.
I'm speaking on behalf of the 3G group, which is an association of Friends of the Hart Trail, the Citizens for Charleswood Habitat Preservation, and Charleswood Historical Society. The issue that I wanted to raise was one which I didn't get an opportunity to raise at the last meeting, and it is important enough to us that we feel that it really needs to be on the table. And it's something that the city needs to be aware of and take some initiative on. And specifically, it's with regard to the Ridgewood Transportation Levy, and we were very much in support of that, by the way, the action, the report that was presented and the action that was taken and the approach that the this committee took. Our objective of 25% public reserve, however, public reserve space, natural areas, is rather much in conflict with the general initiative of the Ridgewood Transportation Levy, in that it would, if we are successful, and we will be doing our best over the next period of time to be successful with it, extract a considerable amount of developable acres from the Ridgewood precinct, which, given that the total costs for the infrastructure are not going to be changed, will have the effect of dramatically increasing the transportation levy, or the Ridgewood precinct levy, over and above what your calculations to this point have indicated. And Mr. Vogan's suggestion of $40,000 per acre might be valid if we are unsuccessful. But if we are successful, they'll go up in the order of 15, maybe even 20%. And so I'm wanting the city to recognize that, recognize our effort, perhaps even support our effort to attract and accumulate natural areas for addition to the public reserve that is shown on the precinct plan. Specifically, the levy paid will inevitably accrue to the sale price of the lots, so an effort to assign these costs fairly is appropriate. Specifically, the costs associated with the upgrading of intersections on Wilkes Avenue are assigned entirely to the Ridgewood precinct with no allocation of costs to the developable land to the south. Those intersections will benefit the land to the south. And so those costs, I believe, need to be allocated fairly to lands which are subject to future development as well. And really, the developer in this case is not, should not be expected to pick those up. The city would have to pick those up and then redistribute them amongst the future developers. So, in other words, roughly 50%, and that there's half of the land that's going to use Wilkes is south of Wilkes, should be looked upon as being future costs. Wilkes Avenue is noted in the appendix as a regional transportation facility in the same category as Roblin Boulevard and the Parkway, William Clement Parkway. So the Wilkes Avenue improvement should therefore be paid for in a similar fashion to the Parkway auxiliary lanes at 50% from the levy and 50% from the City of Winnipeg. Third one, significant unnecessary costs are accruing to the Ridgewood Transportation Levy as a result of curtailing the extension of the parkway at the Hart Trail. rather than at Wilkes Avenue. In other words, if the extension went through to Wilkes Avenue, the parkway, the upgrading of connections at Elmhurst and at Fairmont to Wilkes Avenue may not be required. In fact, you may even close those streets. That you won't know until after the study is done this year and assessing the parkway extension and the realignment of Wilkes. But all I'm saying is that there's a significant number of dollars there that should be up in the air rather than being allocated to somebody at this time. And I suspect if the study is completed, we'll be in a better position to know where those funds should be allocated at that time. Upgrading of that portion of Rannoch to the west of Charleswood Road is called up. In fact, you're planning, at least the plan shows upgrading of Rannoch right through to Dale Avenue. But west of Charleswood Road, it's already been upgraded. There's no need for additional upgrading of that portion of the road. there is no sign of a pedestrian or wildlife crossing over the W.R. Clement Parkway. Significant chunk of dollars there. It hasn't even been discussed as to who's going to pay for that at this stage. That was notable by its absence, I guess, from my perspective. So I'm assuming from that that it's going to be entirely the City of Winnipeg that pays for it, but that's a rash assumption. That's all that I had to say.
Do you have that shopping list so we can have a copy?
I do.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. Any questions for Alan? Appreciate it. Thank you, sir. Victoria McDonald.
Hello, councillors. My name is Victoria McDonald, and I'm the chair for Citizens for Charleswood Habitat Preservation. And I'm happy to be here, actually, to be in support of the Sub-Area 1 plan. And I know that there's been a lot of energy and effort and conversations that have transpired since the last meeting, and actually over the whole course of the process. So I'm actually here just to reiterate some of the things that I've heard, albeit it's not new. I still think it's worthwhile at this stage. And one of them is that, you know, we really appreciate the energies and effort that went towards the protection and enhancement of the Hart Trail, as Donovan outlined. I think that's significant and needs to be commended. Also, the natural area revisions to preserve the Big Blue Stem. We know that that was an issue that Mr. Van Roon raised last time, and so we've worked hard to try and alter that plan to make it a win-win situation. And although those coordination of the revisions occurred at the last minute, that's probably, to me, reflects the commitment to try and make this thing happen, and I think that should be applauded. I also think that the path under the perimeter, and I appreciated the picture there, was favorable. And I understand the other
the Adrenaline Adventures owner has some reservations about it stopping on the other side, and I actually hadn't thought of that, but I still think that that's something that can be worked on after the fact. We also know that people will be going underneath the perimeter highway, and at some point in time we can develop paths that connect back up to, I think it's called the Headingley Grand Trunk path at that site. So that's all doable, I think. You know, it doesn't have to be resolved right now. The other thing I wanted to comment, too, is that, and I'm glad, Paula, that you asked that question about the total percentage of public reserves. So in the sub-area 1 plan, there is under dedication of 0.6%. And so I was glad to hear that Eric had indicated that he was open to different suggestions on how to make up that 6%. It's also interesting that there was a recommendation to acknowledge the public reserve existing from the water level to the path, because, and I understand that that's an enhancement, and different types of grasses will be sown to enhance the public experience of walking along those retention ponds. But I actually think that what it really does is represent a higher bar for those types of pathways for other developers. So I would like to see that instead of that difference in be recognized as public reserve credit, that actually be set the bar. So I would like to see that 6% that's under get dedicated either go to, and this is upon further discussion, to the land dedication reserve. That could be spent specifically in the Ridgewood precinct, or perhaps used within sub-area 1. So that's my comment about that. And I think, you know, that's about it. I don't. That's all I really have to say.
Questions, anybody, for Victoria?
No. Great. Fine.
Thank you.
Okay,
appreciate
thank you.
It. Okay. Bob Hinkleman? Darlene and Terry Boucher? Okay, here goes Terry. Darlene. Lori Wilson's Sarens? Support. Berna Hare? Berna? Support. Thank you. Hey, Darlene.
Hi, my name is Darlene Boucher. I'm a longtime Charleswood resident. And I wanted to just say how happy I am with option 2B and the commitment that Qualico and Landmark showed drawing plans over the weekend. I know usually we say we don't want last-minute changes, but this time we really, really welcome it. I think it is a win-win situation. It saves more of the big blue stem. It gives the opportunity to save more oaks, and the area of public reserve at the north end of or north of Van Roon Drive, just at the west end there, is much larger and actually becomes a viable area of public reserve. I want to say, though, there were a couple of things, and Eric Vogan referenced one of the concerns that CCHP continues to have, and that is the fencing around at the perimeter and the fencing by the CN tracks. Now, I wasn't quite clear whether that had been resolved or not. Eric, was it resolved?
We have an understanding with the administration.
Okay, well, we'd be interested in knowing what your understanding with the administration is, because from what we could see, homeowners would be responsible for maintaining land that was beyond a 2.5-meter berm and a 3-meter fence, and I had visions. If I could have done a cartoon drawing, I would have drawn a man scaling that fence, hauling a lawnmower to go over the other, or a lawnmower to go over the other side to maintain that property. So I would be interested in knowing what the administration came up with on that one, because that was a concern. Were there any questions?
Oh, thank you. No. Appreciate it.
James could clarify the issue of fencing.
Darlene, James Veach is going to clarify your last issue there about the berm
So those conditions you're referring to are based on the proximity guidelines
for
residential development next to rail lines. So what you're talking about is right at the property line of the railway right-of-way, there's a requirement for a 1.83-meter chain-link fence.
Yes.
Then there's a space to allow for a 2.5-meter berm to be built. And on top of the berm is a what the proximity guidelines ask for, a 3-meter-high sound attenuation wall. So she's asking about that space between the chain-link fence and this 3-point-high-meter wall. Who's going to maintain that? What happens in there? Speaking with parks and speaking with the developers, the city isn't going to make anybody maintain that.
Okay.
We can let it just repropagate itself with vegetation, grasses. Eventually saplings will grow up. Trees might eventually start to grow in there, and it would just be left to go wild. So even though it's part of private property, because the city isn't maintaining it, it's part of those lots, it would be just an area where it would revegetate in a natural state. That's what we see happening there.
Okay, well, little maintenance is what we would like, because then the area will naturalize. My other concern, though, is about a dumping in that land. It's not generally a problem in other areas?
It wouldn't be accessible, from what I understand, and it would be private property. So if someone was to dump a bag of leaves on my property, I would get rid of it or try to catch the person doing it. Or
I'm not worried about leaves. I'm worried about mattresses.
Yeah, I can't see how that would be accessible for mattresses and things because of the fencing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, that concludes our applications at this point. Is there anybody else in support that would like to speak?
Councillor, I was going to be speaking on the negative, the opposition side.
Okay. Come on down. You're switching. Wait, what was your name, sir? Is it Otto? Yeah, I saw your name here. Have I got the right pile? There you go.
Say while he's coming down here, when I first appeared today, I saw two options: option one and option two. Option A and option B. Not this option.
That's B. Yeah.
This is B. It's option one and option two. Neither of which were acceptable in my mind. But now that I see that Donovan has massaged that roadway and saved the blue stem and trees, I would withdraw my opposition as a member of the Hart Trail, which is what I'm speaking. Now, what we are, our recommendation is concerning noise and vibration attenuation in this district, and it deals with the fencing issue. And it is in regard to Exhibit 7 of the administration's report, recommendation number 2. So we have some suggested amendments to that, which we believe will alleviate many of the problems that have just been discussed.
And you just gave it to Destiny, right?
Yeah, the paper version. So let me just read the first page of that while it's being empowered here. So insofar as recommendation number 2.2, we would like to amend the fence configuration to eliminate inaccessible space. We'd like to extend this application, to include the CN Rail perimeter highway and the WRCP extension. We want subparagraph 4 deleted from the administration's recommendation number 2. And we want to add 2.5 meters of a berm or raise the fence height to make the fence an effective fence. And if we can get the diagram up, we'll show you what it is that we're recommending, the changes from the prescribed configuration, which deals with the railway, the 23 meters distance to the property line, then the berm, and of course, it's a lot easier to describe this if you have the illustration in front of you. So basically, what we are recommending is that rather than have a chain link fence right at the property line, and then a berm, a 2.5 meter earthen berm, 7.5 meters into the property, on top of which there is a 3 meter high noise attenuation fence, our suggestion is the berm should be right at the property line. There should be the 3 meter high attenuation fence on top of that berm. And then you have the landowners having totally accessible access to their entire property. And you're going to alleviate the issue of dumping and not being having access to that strip of property. Of course, this will require the approval of CN, because the berm is going to have to be built right at the property line. And that'll be some bit of involvement with the CNs right away, but not significant. I mean, this should be a win-win situation insofar as noise is concerned and insofar as, you know, wasted space is concerned and perhaps littering by, you know, people coming by. I understand that the fencing along, and I've been told this, I can't speak from my own knowledge, but apparently along Shaft, the fence east of Shaftesbury, has pretty well what we're recommending for this area. And we're recommending this for the entire precinct area.
You know, I know that area because I visited it.
Okay.
That berm is 2 meters and there's no fence. So this is much further along with 2 meters and 2.5. In fact, it's almost near the top of this wall in height at 2 meters. You want it to be 3 meters on top of a 2.5?
We want a 3 meter berm. High acoustical fence on top of a 2.5 meter berm. Okay? So that's 5.5 meters. Right. In total, with the berm being right on the on the customer's, on the landowner's property line.
So that's what it is.
Well,
yes,
you would like to do it this way, where the foot comes onto the CN.
Okay, we'll ask the Public Works Department when we have an extensive list of questions. We'll ask them their professional opinion on that.
Well, you do have the drawing in the paper handout that I gave you.
Yep.
So, and it shows clearly, I mean, it's a logical recommendation.
And what is the purpose, though, of
the purpose is to have
noise attenuation?
Noise attenuation and usable space for the landowner, okay. Well, and not having a blocked-off portion from the first fence to the berm, the recommended, the prescribed configuration is a chain link fence on the property line, which is only 2 meters high, and then on top of the berm, a 3 meter high attenuation on top of a berm, 2.5 meters high, but 7.5 meters into the landowner's property, which we think just doesn't make any sense. And our recommendation would solve these problems.
Yeah.
And it should be doable.
I just saying, I'm assuming the committee will be asking some questions, and I think we're all working the same principle. You want as much privacy and reduce that amount of wasted space. But let's get some information from the experts. And
I'm sure that the applicants would be definitely in support of this suggestion of eliminating the...
We'll ask our administration and also the applicant on that, sir.
Did you get it?
Thank you.
No. Okay, thank you very much, Council.
Thank you.
Gracias.
May I offer any clarification to that? The objective was to amalgamate those two fences into one and eliminate the void space between, the inaccessible void space. That one fence would be located on the right-of-way between the personal property line and the railway right-of-way line.
Yeah, no, we get it. Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
All right, we're going to take a comfort break here for 5 minutes. So.